What's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 10 of the Breaking the Plane podcast. I want to shout out our boys over at Primetime Productions, who we partner with. Check them out on Twitter at Primetime Prods, their website, primetimeproductions.net. Continuing to add content daily to that website. All four sports, including college, are covered as well. Lots of great content, so be sure to check them out. I'm your host, Burge, back again. I don't know why I keep doing this to myself with the way my Patriots have been playing. It's been miserable following football this year, but here I am ready to let you all listen to me talk about it. I'm sure my co-host, Joe, sure, a.k.a. the King Shithead, shares that mindset. Totally. How you doing today, Joe?
Better today. I'm glad we don't record on Sunday afternoons because we would just be obituizing myself. Is it obituary?
Yeah, you're right. You got it.
Obituizing. Yeah. Anyway, this week we're lacking Kojak. He's stuck in a hole somewhere in northeastern Massachusetts. Our thoughts and prayers go out to him and the construction crew that's still working. But we do have my brother from another mother, Shiloh Van Hill, aka Shy. He's our token Jets friend in our friend group here. So go ahead and tell us a little something about yourself there, Shy.
How's it going, guys? I appreciate you having me on. I've been listening to every single episode, and I'm a big fan of what you guys are doing. It's very weird hearing a Patriots podcast that I can actually enjoy listening to. background about me, I am not anymore because I reside in Austin, but I was in the worst fan base situation possible. I'm a Jets fan living in New England for about 15, 20 years during the Brady era. So, I did find out a toaster does not float in the bathtub a few times. But I'm happy to be on here, and shout out to Kojak, wherever he is. Happy belated birthday to him. Finally, yeah, in the 28-plus club.
He's finally getting old. It's finally getting old. I gotta ask you, Shai, how has it been dealing with this curse of the Jets? Obviously, we know what's gone on with the Patriots over the last 20 years with the dominance that the Patriots have had. But this year of all years was supposed to be like the year for the Jets to really make that step with getting Aaron Rodgers in to go with that elite defense and Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall in that offense. And then all of a sudden, the first drive of the game, Aaron Rodgers goes down. I got to know what was going on in your mind at that moment, because as somebody who was watching that really wasn't invested in it, I was just like, oh my God, the Jets are cursed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it sounds corny, sounds overused, but like, it's so Jets. Like, no other way to put it. We got a four-time MVP, Super Bowl winning quarterback. He willingly wants to come to the Jets, which is something that nobody wants to do usually. Unless we break the bank on them. And he actually took a pay cut coming to us. So it was, you should have seen it from a mile away. Way too good to be true.
Are you mad they sold out for all of his buddies?
100%. You look at our O-line this year. I know I'm a couch GM. Like, obviously Joe Douglas is a GM for a reason, but to go into the season with a 38 going on 39 year old quarterback and not doing anything to improve the O-line other than draft a young center who is playing relatively good, but to go in with grabbing no veterans and yet bringing in Alan Lazard, who can't catch anything for the life of him, and bringing in Randall Cobb to be a locker man guy, when we don't need that. We needed people at the front. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know where to really go at it. I'm just sad.
Yeah. It's just so sad that Lazard's a fucking, he's a healthy scratch, and you guys let up 4 sacks and 8 tackles for a loss. We can just jump into this game now. We're kind of already starting on the Jets.
Go with it.
Okay with that. Yeah. I just like, it was so bad because, like, dude, the Falcons didn't play particularly well. You know what I mean? They didn't play great in this game. They didn't run the ball particularly great. Desmond Ridder, I think, had like under 50% passing. He had that one touchdown, 120-yard touchdown throw. But like I said, Atlanta had 4 sacks and 8 tackles for a loss. That Jets O-line couldn't. It was almost like every play there was a free runner. And I know that's partially on the quarterback, but you got to have some kind of veteran. Like you said, you have a young center. Like having a young center and not a lot of talent around is a recipe for disaster. Because you can even, like the Eagles, you can see Kelce when Hurts makes a bad read, he can reset the play or reset the protection and kind of cover up for that stuff. But he has a skill around him to help him out as well. But mm-hmm. I think it doesn't matter if it's Boyle, Simeon, or Wilson. I think right now Wilson might actually give you the best chance to win because of his mobility, because fucking Boyle and Simeon look like statues out there. But, I mean, like you said, dude, it's just sad because the team was set up. It was set up to be a Ferrari, and then they just forgot to put gas in it or forgot to put tires on it with the O-line. It just could have been a lot better, obviously.
100%. And what you were saying about Philly's offensive line, main thing that comes out of that is the chemistry. Those guys have been there for – they've been there since their first Super Bowl appearance back in 2017 of recent. And I'd say about three of those guys are still there with the transition of maybe two or three coming in along the way. Jets have 8 starting lineups so far this season. There's no chemistry built there.
Yeah.
There's no communication being available.
What's happened to Mekhi Becton? I remember when he first came out, like as a rookie, like he was like a gigantic dude and was a beast when he was out there. Like what's happened to him? What's happened to him with his decline?
He's just injury ridden. His first year, he got injured towards the end of the season. Second year out the whole season. And year after that, tears his ACL in preseason. I'll quote what you guys force on this show and emphasize: best ability is availability. And he's a great when he's on the field, but he reminds me of a lower version of Jason Peters. Jason Peters was awesome, but he could never stay on the field.
It's a good comp. Wasn't Elijah Vera Tucker a first round pick too? Wasn't he was a high draft pick? And he's a guy that's kind of underperformed as well, right?
Yeah, I'm going to sound like a broken record. Great, great when he's on the field, but last two seasons been ruled out for the season for, I want to say, pectoral injury and then another knee injury.
It's unfortunate when that happens. It's unfortunate. Go ahead.
Yeah.
It's just crazy how much of an Achilles heel a fucking offensive line could be. Like, dude, the Jets are loaded at good. I mean, before when they had Aaron Rodgers, they were loaded at every single position on offense. Like, even you have two serviceable tight ends well with Uzama and Conklin. Is it Conklin? Yeah. So you have serviceable or very above average in Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson, skill players at every position. But it's just, dude. Like you could say that, like, if you had an offensive line like the Eagles or the Niners, you could plug and play any quarterback with the kind of, I mean, Garrett Wilson's a great jump ball guy, great contested catch guy. Don't need to be the most, you don't have to be the most accurate thrower. Look at last year. He played the whole year with Wilson and backup QBs. He still put up 1,000 yards and a bunch of touchdowns. And you have Breece Hall, who's great with the ball in his hands. After the catch or even between the tackles, he can break it and run for 80, 90 yards for a touchdown. So it seems like, I don't know. If I was the Jets and I was investing in all in this season, I don't know. I mean, it's a catch 22, right? If you don't sign Lazard and Cobb, do you even get Aaron Rodgers? Or do you try to get Aaron Rodgers and use and convince him without those players and then use that money to on the offensive line? Or do you even have that money? Because he's like, well, I'm not taking a pay cut if you're not bringing my guys in with the extra money I give you. So I don't know. Part of it is you got the player's culpable, but I don't know. Some, like, I think we said it last week about Josh Allen. Sometimes you have to save quarterbacks from themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, you look at this game too against Atlanta. I mean, the final score of this game was 13-8. It was one of those another greasy, grindy, probably a bad football game. Again, I didn't watch it, so I don't know if it was bad football. But, I mean, anytime you see a score that low, you think, like, either strong defensive performance or bad football. And I'm going to lean towards the latter as somebody just looking at it from above just because of what these two teams are. Atlanta can't get out of their own way either. I mean, Arthur Smith down there, you know, at times this year hasn't used Kyle Pitts, hasn't used Bijan Robinson in roles that they need to be used in. And Kyle Pitts, when he was drafted, he was billed as a generational talent at the position, and we're going on year 3 now with him. And he's almost a bust at this point. Like, I think Kyle Pitts, if he's a guy, he needs to get out of that situation, get to a different team, because his career can take off at any point just based on what he was when he came into the league. And just seeing that the Jets didn't even go to Zach Wilson this game, I thought that I saw the reports that, like, he didn't want to go into this game. You see him joking around with Aaron Rodgers on the sideline. that whole position for that team is a mess right now. And at this point, they're pretty much out of playoff contention. They're not mathematically eliminated yet by any means, but take a real miracle to get them there. And it just seems like, let's just play for next year. If Aaron Rodgers comes back and plays this year, I think it'd be stupid on his part to risk another injury to come back.
Yeah, I can't. Why would you even do that? Risk more injury to come back this year? That would be so silly. That'd be so silly.
I mean, I'm rooting for it.
Why, yeah. I don't know why anyone would.
Or
do
he
that.
Just he just, wants to def- he wants to he wants to prove everybody wrong and come back. I hope he comes. I hope he comes back and is the placeholder for a field goal by Greg Zuerlein and takes
has
the
to
snap.
Take a snap. Has to take a snap. Oh, yeah, he's
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And he's got to come back to send Joe to that ayahuasca hut. He's in his head. Aaron Rodgers is thinking about it. He's going to send Joe to the ayahuasca hut to get somebody in his
corner. Aaron Rodgers is a perfect kind of dude to be like, all right, I have this like huge team of social media people fucking search the web for my name on, and I'm listening to every segment on every fucking podcast. And he locked in on this one. It just so happened to be the one episode. I'm like, I'm going in the hut if he comes back. And now there's a picture of me like fucking Ivan Drago on fucking Rocky's fucking mirror in the Siberian tundra. And every fucking morning he goes into the fucking HGH clinic and he's like, Joe Scherr! I can guarantee it, dude. If he tests positive, I get three podcasts to myself to talk about whatever I want.
I'm not agreeing to that.
Well, I guess I'm the only one nuts on this podcast.
You get one.
All right. One. Deal.
I'll sit here and I'll take any kind of slander you want to throw my way, and I won't say a word.
It'll be an hour's worth of Joe streaming his lawnmower game.
This is an electric only contract, so I actually have to lean. I have to put a lien against one of my tractors to buy an EV tractor. Yeah. I don't know. The Falcons aren't good. And dude, did you know Arthur Smith's dad is the CEO and founder of FedEx? And that he could just quit the Falcons right now and be just as rich and well off as he is. Mm-hmm. He's doing that to that franchise for no fucking reason. Yeah. No reason. He has no reason to have a job or do anything. Nothing. Mm-hmm. His dad's worth $72 billion. Wait, 72 with a B? Yeah.
Yeah. If he's the CEO of FedEx, it's got to be B. It's got to be a B.
It's a couple billions, dude.
I do want to say I want to give credit to the Atlanta Falcons. I know it was an ugly game. No offense at all. Desmond Ridder looked a lot better than he actually is. But Atlanta did get it right with their defense. They put in a lot of money this offseason. Jesse Bates is a dog.
Absolutely.
Jesse Bates is a dog. He's consistent. He's been doing this the entire year. Adding in Bud Dupree, too. I feel like he was kind of forgotten after he left Pittsburgh. And he's starting to have a spark again.
I totally agree.
Absolutely.
But well, it's crazy. You got to say they're the classic, like they got it right on one side of the ball. And I feel like they're just a quarterback away. Like, I mean, they have Bijan Robinson, they have Pitts. I think Drake London could be a pretty decent asset to a good quarterback. I just think like they can't really, they haven't been able to run the ball with fucking Bijan Robinson, which is like not being able to run the ball with Barry.
By choice.
Yeah.
They haven't been putting him in there and giving him the carries.
Exactly.
Which is a coaching decision.
I don't know. I mean, they gave him 16 touches this week and he didn't, I think he had like 3 yards a carry. So it's like, I don't know. They gave him 20 touches and he had 53 yards. What is that? I can't do that in my head. 2.9 average of the 12 long. So I don't know. They're another team there where at the two most important positional groups, the O-line and the quarterback, they really don't have it figured out. But everywhere else, they really do.
If you're going to spend a high asset on a player, like a high draft pick, like Bijan and Kyle Pitts, you need to use them the way that you need to build around them. And Atlanta's not doing that right now. So
agreed.
We'll see where it goes, you know, in the offseason, what they can do to address their team. And we obviously know what the Jets need.
Falcons too. They're still first in their division.
Dude, they're 6-6. Oh my god!
It's garbage division. The Souths were the ones we talked about as being the garbage divisions, and the AFC South actually looks decent. The NFC South is just
horrible.
Horrible. Yeah. So
let's talk about two good teams now.
Yeah, we're gonna move on to two good teams and. We're going to talk about the 49ers and the Eagles next year. That was a game that I watched. Mr. Kojak last week had the Eagles play. What was it? Minus plus three, right? They were plus three.
Eagles plus three that only missed by 20 fucking points.
Yeah, they had a rough day. They had a rough day out there. 49ers beat the Eagles in Philadelphia 42-19. And let's just say that Debo Samuel and Christian McCaffrey are dogs. Like this is a classic case. Like we talk about this all the time, Joe, about a quarterback just being able to go in there and manage the game. Brock Purdy is doing that. And I think he's doing more than that. I mean, he only threw eight incompletions in this game, 314 and four touchdowns. Debo had two of them. Ayuk had one and Juwan Jennings had the other. Christian McCaffrey found pay dirt on the ground. Debo for a third time found pay dirt on the ground. It was like, this was kind of a game where the Eagles, I think were flirting with all year with how they've won games. There's been some games that they've kind of squeaked by and just found a way to win it. And they got their pants blown off. And I wish we saw this last year in the NFC title game before, you know, Brock Purdy's out there trying to throw a ball with no elbow. And just, I think I've been big on the 49ers on this pod since we started doing this thing. And I'm rolling with them. What'd you think?
Well, we always preface big games like this or games that we talk about. We always preface it. Who's to say more about? I think this says 10 times more about the Eagles than it does the Niners. I think we knew this about the Niners. They're an extremely explosive offense with a defense that if you have to play from behind, you have to throw on them. It's going to be a long fucking day. They have six guys on the defensive line that can get after the passer. They're all fresh. And it's crazy when you got into the third quarter of this game, it's like the Eagles offensive linemen were standing in mud. They have so many guys that can rotate through there and keep fresh. But I mean, the Eagles rushed for under 50 yards, 2.6 yards a rush. Jalen Hurts was 26 of 45, threw the ball 45 times. As a team, they threw it 48 times because they had Mariota go in at the end, go in a little bit when Hurts was, I don't know if it was injured or when it was just a blowout.
They were looking at him for a concussion, I think.
Okay. Yeah. But the Eagles, dude, I'm scared. If I was an Eagles fan, this would be a little bit jarring. I think the fact that they went out and signed, Leonard. They went out and signed Leonard. They gave up, They gave up almost 500 yards of total offense in this game. So I think they have something to figure out. I think if the Eagles are playing from behind, they're kind of cooked. I think that, and I think when you run up against a team like the 49ers who are built to play from ahead, I think it's a recipe for disaster. And I think if this is an NFC championship game, and then now that they have the tiebreaker over the Eagles, I know they're still a full game back, but now they have the tiebreaker over the Eagles and the Eagles potentially would have to play on the road in a rematch. I don't know. This game had a lot of big implications and I would not be pumped if I was a Philly fan.
Next week's a big game for the Eagles. They got to play the Cowboys. That's going to be a big game for them. And it's in Dallas. So,
yeah.
You got any thoughts, Shy, on this matchup?
I don't know. I didn't catch this game as much. I got glimpses of it. I had family over, unfortunately. But,
unfortunately, my mother-in-law was standing in front of the fucking TV.
Yeah.
No, of course not.
No, she sits on the couch and talks.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's not much to really say about it. 42-19, that's no matter what your tier is in this league, that's inexcusable. I just think the 49ers, they really are the top dogs right now in the league. When all of their star players are in, I don't think they're touchable by anybody else. Just once again, back to the chemistry. You even see on that Debo Samuel rushing touchdown, George Kittle is able to block two guys and let him walk into the end zone. It's just like they know where they're going to be. They know the play before it's going to happen. And I think Brock Purdy's a perfect quarterback for that offense.
They're so locked into. They're like so like it's like the execution is like the buy-in and the execution is just fucking it's honestly beautiful football to watch, juxtaposing it to like watching the Patriots and the Chargers like fumble around in the rain and like stumble all over themselves and then turning it over to this game and watching the fucking 49ers execute on offense. It's unbelievable. But I gotta go back to the MVP thing, dude. I can't stand these fucking MVP. Dude, Brock Purdy is not the most valuable player.
Not close.
Just like just like last week, dude, he's not even the most valuable player on his side of the ball, dude. There's three other players on the offense alone that are more valuable than him. Maybe even four, dude. They lost Debo, and they lost Trent Williams for a game, dude. And they go 0-3, dude. So it's just the most aggravating part about the fucking MVP is just coming a fucking quarterback trophy. Dude, Tyreek Hill goes off, has 140 yards in one fucking half of football, and they win by 35 fucking points solely on his back, dude. And you could even say that Tua has a better week than Brock Purdy. And they still did. Somehow Brock Purdy is still the number one. Dude, it doesn't matter. Like, your team record, yeah, it should matter. Obviously, if you have comparable stats to somebody else and you have a better team and a better overall record, then, yeah, maybe you should get the nod more because maybe what you're producing and your production is being more conducive to winning. But, like, right now, I would if you took either Debo, Trent Williams, or McCaffrey off that offense, they're all it would suffer way more than putting the next placeholder for fucking Brock Purdy. It's so it's so aggravating, dude. It's like, I hate Tyreek Hill as a person, and I don't like the Dolphins, but he is a clear-cut most valuable with a V, like valuable player in the league this year.
I think he's on pace to be the first 2,000-yard receiver.
Without a doubt.
NFL history.
Didn't Calvin Johnson do it?
I don't think he hit it. I think that he was very close, but I think that if Tyreek Hill does this if Tyreek Hill does this in 16 games or less, it's impressive. But if he does it in 17, there comes with a caveat to it because obviously added game. And I don't think Calvin Johnson did get it. I don't think he did.
No, Julio were the closest.
They were close,
dude. Mm-hmm. But he is on pace. Like, his pace is like even faster than Megatron's right now. He's at 1,500 yards through, 12 games? Are you fucking serious?
If he hits 2,016 or less, it's the best season for a wide receiver in NFL history. If it's 17...
He's got four games to get 500 yards.
He can accomplish that in that offense down there. But
dude, 16 yards of reception, dude. 93 receptions through 12 games for 1,481 yards. Holy fuck.
Right?
Holy fuck.
If you want to talk about receptions, Keenan Allen just hit 100. He just hit 100 receptions.
Is he the most underrated player of this generation? He's just so quiet. And it's just like, maybe because he plays for the Chargers on the West Coast, a lot of 4 o'clock, a lot of late games.
A lot of injuries for him, though. He gets hurt a lot, but
doesn't he have 10,000 yards and 1,000 receptions?
He's a consistent receiver when he's on the field. Yeah. When he's on the field, he's a consistent guy.
Yeah. I put him in the Mike Evans kind of category.
That's a good comp. I like that.
I would rather have Mike Evans.
Yeah. But just quickly going back to the whole MVP thing, we can rehash this whole thing again. I think we just talked about it last week. But, like, let's just name the best quarterback award, the Tom Brady Award. Let's just make it that. And the MVP should be the most valuable player for a team. And, again, like I said last week, it doesn't matter if the team is, like, good or makes the playoffs or whatever. If the award should be for if that team was missing that player, their team is substantially worse. It doesn't matter to me. Team could be a 6-win team, but without that one player, if they win one game, that's a most valuable player for me. Like, I want to see somebody other than a quarterback get it. Tyreek Hill, Christian McCaffrey, those guys I would put light years ahead of somebody like Brock Purdy.
Totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah, and the first seven or eight candidates for the MVP are all quarterback. And there's no way that there's eight quarterbacks that are better than Tyreek Hill, better than Christian McCaffrey.
Dude, but Brock Purdy was behind Tyreek Hill and behind Christian McCaffrey last week. And then they have he has one 300-yard game in a primetime spot in the game of the week spot, and he vaults to number one.
Well, it's because they love the story. He's Mr. Irrelevant. True. And he's the way he started his career, I think he was, 16-0 until he lost to the Browns?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a great stat, but again, it disgusts me. Like, I'm right there with you, Joe. I agree with you 100%. You want to move on to our next game here, Joe?
Let's talk about our baby. Time to play the fucking kneecaps, bitch. Detroit at New Orleans. We have the Lions 33, the Saints 28. I think this game got out to a – I had this game as one of my picks. I think it was my lock. The Lions got out to a 21-0 lead, and then they proceed to get outscored 28-12 in the preceding three quarters. So it was kind of a terrifying game for me to watch. It was kind of one of those ticker watches, and kind of caught up on some highlights later. But this is the classic emotional bounce back that I was talking about last week. Not to toot my own horn, but this is exactly what I predicted to happen in my pick. I know there was an emotional game last week. They got slapped on Thanksgiving, so they had 10 days to stew and think about it with an absolute lunatic head coach who I guarantee didn't let them forget about how shitty they played on national television. So, dude, they run the ball for 142 yards at almost 5 yards a clip. Jared Goff has an efficient day, 16-25, 213 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, quarterback rating of 118. You have Sam LaPorta, dude. Making that TJ Hawkinson trade look like an absolute highway robbery, dude. They got this dude and two second round picks, bro. Like that's I don't know. I think it's impressive what Detroit's doing. They're nailing a lot of their draft picks, especially on the skill positions on offense. They're holding it together just enough on defense. And I think Jared Goff having a swan song in Detroit kind of after the whole shit went down with him leaving LA and them immediately winning a Super Bowl, kind of a nice feel good story. And I'm glad they bounced back this week because I want to see them in a home playoff game. I think they deserve it.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you. Like we've talked about on this podcast, we're huge fans of the Detroit Lions. Jared Goff was a throw-in in that trade for Matthew Stafford. Just basically
it was a salary move.
It was to clear the salary so the Rams could fit Stafford on their cap. And yeah, them winning the Super Bowl that year. And, you know, you see Jared Goff, that couldn't have felt good for him. But seeing what he's doing up there right now with that offense, I mean, he's got talent around him up there. The two running backs, Jahir Gibbs and David Montgomery, are a great tandem to have, you know, in the backfield. They rushed for 142 yards in this game. I am a huge fan of Amon-Ra St. Brown. I got him at my bunch of my fantasy teams. I think he's an absolute beast. He only was only had two receptions in this game, but he did have a touchdown and 49 yards. So he had a couple of big catches. And I love everything they're doing. I think Derek Carr got hurt in this game too. So I think he left for the Saints. Jameis Winston came in. Jameis Winston, in my opinion, is one of the better backups to have in the league right now. But I mean,
he's one of the better content providers as an NFL player that you can possibly find. The little ankle workouts with the rubber band in the end zone before every game. Like, what are you doing? That's what happens when you like tell like your fucking one of your boys you grew up with, like, yo, go get a personal trainer license online and you could be my personal trainer. I'll give you $100,000 a year.
Have you seen the video of him at somebody's house where he's doing the dancing thing around? What are you even working on when you're doing that? Like, you're just like, it's hilarious. Hilarious.
His workouts look like that golfer on the driving range with all the training aids. They have like the thing on the head and the thing under their arms and the arm lockout tool and everything.
No, I think the best video is it's got to be like 2 years ago. The Saints won a big game. And during that game, Jameis Winston must have blew his knee out or something. Yes. You see Alvin Kamara and all of them like bumping in the locker room, and you just see him on crutches, just dancing, freaking
on
out.
One leg with the crutches. Yeah. One leg,
looking like, dude, Travis Scott at the concert.
Dude, did you know that they put in special like light programming in the Saints locker room so they can have those like post win parties? So, and then when they redid the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, they did like all this crazy like AV stuff, like audio visual stuff, to the Saints locker room. So they have these giant boom boxes, dude, that all like connect to all the speakers. So, and they have all the lights and shit like that. So they can like just like, they don't have to have somebody like, you know, at a party somebody used to stand next to the lights and turn the lights on and off. Yeah. Like, they don't need that shit anymore, dude. They literally have that shit like programmed into their locker room, like lights and shit.
I wonder if they have like an option for when they lose too. It's just like thunderclouds and like rain drops down into the locker room.
It's just Mozart, so nobody breaks a window and shit. Yeah.
You hear that old country guy? I hurt myself today.
Yes.
Oh. Emotional damage.
Yes. Yes.
Chris
Olave is good though. Sorry. Yeah. Go for it.
No, I'm with you guys on Detroit. They're a very hard team to not like. I imagine even the NFC North opponents that they have, like, they have a hard time hating them. They did it right. They got the right coach in there. David Montgomery, that signing I thought was stupid, getting rid of Swift, but he's turned out to be a pretty good combo for him and Gibbs. Yeah, but the biggest thing is Sam LaPorta. I think it's crazy how Iowa tight ends come out and they become the best receiving tight ends in the league. within a couple years. It's stupid.
They don't score shit in college, dude. These are like blocking tight ends in college, and they come out and they're like unbelievable receiving tight ends.
They go into the Lions preseason, catch their first ball in practice, like, holy shit, like, what is happening right now?
Was Hawkinson an Iowa guy? I'm not a college football guy, so like,
was it Hawkinson and Kittle, right?
Yeah, and Noah Fant, and there's one other guy in the league right now from Iowa who's pretty good.
I knew Noah Fant. And Noah Fant's like an absolute crazy athlete. You think they would have been able to get him the ball in college.
Well, Noah Fant and Hawkinson were on the same – were in draft
at the same time. Yeah.
There's only one ball.
Dude, and then that they have that head coach that can't figure out how to score, and he's just churning out these fucking tight ends. Sam Laporta had a fucking 6 points by himself today, which is like the entirety of a Iowa offense for like four quarters.
Oh yeah,
that's crazy. Like I said, I don't follow the college, so that I didn't know that all those guys came from that one school. Like those are no offense, obviously not having trouble up in Seattle right now with given what that team is, but like. Mm-hmm. He was an absolute stud when he came out. Like he was a top pick. I drafted him in like my dynasty fantasy league like early on because of what he was. He was pretty good in Denver before he got traded.
I want to say they were like, both like top 13 picks in that draft.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Was Laporta a second round pick? Was that a direct use of that fucking one of the Hawkinson picks? Let's not do this now, Joe.
It was second round, 34th overall.
Damn, dude, what? That's so. That is so good. Like, that is such fiscally responsible. Like, that is such, like, that is unbelievable asset management by the Lions. That is unbelievable.
And I'll be honest with you. When it comes to the Lions, dude, like, I laughed when Dan Campbell had that introductory press conference where he's talking about biting kneecaps. And, you know, when they drafted Jahmyr Gibbs early, I was like, what are they doing? Like, they have – I think they still had Swift at that point, and they had just signed Montgomery, too. So I'm like, what are you guys doing? And then would prove me wrong. And what do I know? I'm just a guy, an old guy sitting here doing a podcast, but like, man, they slammed that out of the park, dude.
It panned out well for them. And I think that Thanksgiving loss just put a spark under them. Cause the way that they started this game, I saw a stat this morning on this game. They are the first team in NFL history to score 3 offensive touchdowns in the first 7 minutes of a game.
Holy shit.
Wow.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah, they're such an emotional team, and they're so fun. They play so fucking hard.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I really –
have a motivating head coach who, like, believes in you. It'd be so nice.
All right. That answers the question I just pointed to you in the chat right there, Joe. I'm gonna transition this right now.
Go for it.
To the Chargers and the Patriots. What a barn burner that we had up in Foxborough this past week. Downpouring rain. You could get in the building for, I think, $10 or something like that. I wouldn't have even paid $5. And it has nothing to do with the product of the field.
You would have had to pay me a large sum of money to be in that stadium.
The only reason I wouldn't have paid the $5 was because of the weather. Like, if it wasn't the weather, like, I'll still pay $50 to go to Gillette Stadium to watch a game. Like, just for the experience to go into the stadium and do the whole thing. Like, I would still do it. Just give, no matter what the product is on the field. But
see
that
nifty lighthouse.
Yeah, nobody.
The giant schlong.
nobody could have paid me enough money to go in and sit on that Sunday in that downpouring rain, dude. Especially given what the product is this year, the Patriots lose a whopping a hockey score. We'll call it a hockey score, 6-0, 6-0 to the Chargers. 2 field goals were enough in the second quarter to win this game by the San Diego. The Los Angeles Chargers. I'm still calling them San Diego. I still do it with Las Vegas too. But, what a boring game to watch. Like I sat through the whole thing. I didn't turn it off. I'm not one of those bandwagon Patriots spoiled fans that will turn my team off when they suck. I'm not one of them. I know the Patriots fan base has a lot of them right now. I don't think Joe's one of them because we were talking during this game. Even though Joe tweeted out during this game, I'm going to be playing Madden by halftime. Did you play Madden by halftime? Did you play Madden at halftime?
I may have beat the Chargers by 40 points at the halftime.
That's what I was going to say. It's not giving up on your team. It's a coping mechanism.
That's a fair point.
When the Bills beat the Jets a couple weeks ago, I must have beat the Bills 6 times in a row before turning football back on.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Mac Jones was had like 400 yards passing. It's just like the most unrealistic fucking simulation of football ever.
Yeah. You're pretending to be Joe Buck by yourself. You're like, this is the greatest performance we've ever seen.
I could totally picture Joe doing that. But I'll
I'm
be honest.
Crying. I'm just bawling my eyes out.
It wouldn't have even been fun for me to play as the Patriots in Madden during that game. It just would have pissed me off more. It would have pissed me off more having to throw the ball with Mac Jones. I wouldn't have wanted to do that. Or even would have been worse doing it with Bailey Zappi out there.
I wouldn't have thrown a single screen out of spite.
No, that's the team that, like, when you were younger, you used to play your cousin or younger siblings, and you would let them be like the nasty team. You're like, I'll be the Patriots, and then like that's how it
Yeah.
Now when I play some pitches, I want to do the trick where you like plug the controller in like under the fucking Xbox, so it doesn't really, you're not really playing.
But yeah, getting back to the game here, like there's a couple things I want to talk about here. Bailey Zappi playing, we know what he is. We've seen it now for two seasons now. He's not an NFL starting quarterback. We know that. But I will say this, watching him play and move around behind that offensive line was like, dude, if Mac Jones had the ability to do something like this and make like strong throws with his decision making that he was built with coming out of college, like, he would be a lot better. Like, he had Mac, this game, what this game told me was, well, it didn't tell me it, but like Mac Jones, obviously we knew wasn't the guy, but like seeing Bailey Zappi, a backup, move around back there, Mac Jones would have, if Mac Jones was back there, dude, he's off his back foot throwing picks all day. Mm-hmm. And it's frustrating because you see guys like Gardner Minshew, who's a backup, and I'm going to go back a couple of weeks from when they played against the Patriots over in Germany. And I said this after that game. Gardner Minshew put on a clinic on how to make something out of nothing. Gets out of the pocket, was able to make some throws. Mac Jones would throw the pick and just throw off his back foot and panic. And it's something you got to see out of your quarterback. And seeing Bailey Zappi do that, it was encouraging to see that. This is not me praising Bailey Zappi in any way, but like seeing his ability to kind of create a little bit was a nice change to what we have seen for the last 12 weeks of Patriots
great
football.
0 points and zero snaps inside the red zone.
It's still a problem. I'm not sitting here saying
I totally
that he's
agree,
good.
Dude. I totally agree with you, dude, but it was like every time he needed to make that play that you're talking about, avoid the rush and do something on third and fourth down when it was a very important time in the game, maybe when they would, I don't know, score a fucking point. Like, he always seemed to get sacked in that scenario. And it's like the situational awareness. Like, they had one where there would have been either a short fourth down or the ability to kick a field goal, and he takes a sack, pushing them out of field goal range and pushing them out of a range where they could go for it. And it's like, I have it down. I'm like, dude, the offense did look more functional, like just more functional in general. Like, they had one procedural penalty where Trent Brown fucking substituted incorrectly, but like everything itself, like it looked more like an actual professional operation, but like it's still not good enough. Like, you have Bailey Zappi like putting in, like making his best throw of the day that goes right between Tyquan Thornton's hands 40 yards down the field.
That was
like
a dime.
That was a dime, dude. And it's just like he's not talented enough to make that play consistently, but when he makes that play, you have to capitalize on it. Mm-hmm. And the Patriots just don't have the skill position players to do so. And it's so sad to see, dude. Ramondre was getting going, dude. He was getting to the second level.
Yeah.
On that second drive, dude. He had like 30, 40 yards on that second drive. And then the first or second carry of the next drive, he gets his leg caught up under somebody on the hip drop tackle, which I don't even want to get into because it's like you can't legislate every play out of the game. But that one seems to be claiming more lives than any of the other ones that actually are kind of banned here. But yeah, it's just a sad state of affairs. It's they don't even attempt a field goal. You don't even get close to field goal range. And even if you were, you don't have a kicker that you trust to make anything outside of 30 yards. Like, their punter was going off all game. They didn't have really any good field goal, any good field position. The defense played well, but I mean, doesn't really matter, dude. Like, I think the Chargers are kind of giving it to you at some points. I don't think they were good situationally at all today. Justin Herbert wasn't very efficient at all today. I think this game could have been blown wide open with a comparable offense on the other side of the ball. But like it is, I think the Patriots are just Bill Belichick's only goal right now is to keep it not embarrassing. He doesn't want to get embarrassed. He doesn't want to have the crafts get embarrassed. But I think regardless of what goes on the field, how empty that fucking stadium was on Sunday was embarrassing to me as a Patriots fan.
I mean, this is just so surreal for me, like being like, watching this, like growing up, like they were like always the big brother, and like, don't get me wrong, they're still, they still,
till you beat us, till you beat us.
Yeah, exactly. But
wait a couple of weeks.
I don't know. This is a very deflated Patriots team, and it's very weird to see how this is panning out. And I just want to ask you guys, like, where do you start? Like, obviously this is rebuilding mode now, 100%. Like, is it adding players? Is it getting rid of Bill? Like, do you start fresh?
Poking the bear.
I think the only thing we can agree on, Birch, is you have to start with the OC. You score the least amount of points in league history. You score the least amount of points since 2011, 2013. You lose your job. The OC loses its job. You know what the last team to score this least amount of points in 13 games was? It was the 2010 Rams. You know who was the OC there? Josh McDaniels. So every time that you have a quarterback that's not fucking Tom Brady, this offense doesn't fucking work. You know why? It's way too fucking complicated, and it predicates on the quarterback being fucking perfect every down, every third down, every third and five. It depends on the quarterback and the wide receiver being on the exact same page and making a surgical cut in the defense. It doesn't work like that anymore. You don't have enough practices in the preseason. You don't have enough OTAs. You don't have enough practices during the season with pads on to get the timing down, to get all these well-oiled machines. Shy, you were talking about offensive line continuity and why the Eagles are so good. It's the same group of players playing over and over again. That's why the Patriots offenses were so good. It's because we had Gronk and Edelman and Brady playing within the system for 10 years straight. If we're starting all over again, we shouldn't be starting with one of the most complicated run pass systems ever in football. Like, we have to start there. You have to modernize the offense. You have to get a player that is comparable to today's game. You cannot have a static pocket passer unless it's Joe Burrow. And you see what's happening to him. He's getting absolutely murdered. So if you don't have the offensive line, you don't have the quarterback, you don't have the OC, it's pointless. It's pointless. You got to start there. You got to start with a new young offensive mind. We've argued about the fucking head coach a million fucking times. We don't have to rehash the same fucking argument. But the question you asked is where you start. Where you actually start is on the offensive side of the ball. You need Ferraris. You need Bugattis. You need Lamborghinis. I'm done with the fucking Nissan Altimas. I'm done with the Honda Civics. I'm done with the fucking Geo Prisms. I'm done with it, dude. You got to go get Ferraris, and you got to go get a fucking race car driver who can drive it.
Jeez, a Geo Prism reference there.
Shout out Matt Bennett, the Geo Prism.
I'm with you on that. I think that I'll go a step further. It's not just the OC. I think a lot of the offensive coaches need to go. Somebody like Troy Brown, all right, respected, revered wide receiver for this team, hasn't really been able to get these wide receivers up to speed. And you say what you want about the talent that they have. But like,
hey, Adrian, you're going.
The guys that they have at wide receiver, like Devontae Parker, Juju Smith-Schuster, Pop Douglas, Booty, like Kendrick Bourne, like those guys are guys with they do have talent. They do have talent. They're not, you know, dipping into that talent with the way that the thing has run this year. Tyquan Thornton running bad routes, dropping balls. I mean, you could say what you want about him being a bust, and all that. But like,
where is he?
He showed up on Sunday.
Unfortunately, he was on the field on Sunday, Shiloh.
He did have a nice play. He did have a nice play in this game. He had a 39-yard rush on a sweep that was like, where has this been all year when he's been healthy? Like, why haven't they not run this? The guy has speed. The guy does have speed.
He's actually worse than N'Keal Harry. They put up the stats. He actually has less receptions and less yards than N'Keal Harry.
He hasn't been hurt. It's best abilities availability. He's been hurt the whole time. True. He's always been hurt. And, you know,
no momentum off anything.
You want to talk about Adrian Clem. I mean, the offensive line has been like awful. I mean, they returned what? Four guys this year. They returned Onwenu, Andrews, Strange, and Brown this year from last year. And they have looked light years worse than what they were last year, which is deeply concerning. And yeah, you could say like some of these guys are getting older. We know about Trent Brown and his issues. He's always had issues about giving all the effort and all that. We know about him.
The picture Strange in practice today, standing in the corner. Dude, he's standing in the corner without his helmet, not even in his hands, just standing there in the corner with his arms folded, watching the offensive line go through drills. It's like,
that's bad.
Just fucking get him out of here. Just get him out. Just get him out.
The thing is, though, like, if you look at some of the grades on his performances this year when he's been out there, he's been pretty good. Like, he's been pretty good at that position. Michael Wenyu, now that he's a right tackle, he's had a little bit of hiccups here, but, like, I think if they give him, like, a full offseason and a full, like, the full thing at that position and just commit to him at that spot, he's going to be good. He showed it. I think
he could play left tackle.
Maybe.
I just think a right tackle or a left tackle have totally different body compositions. You want to be a little bit more lean on the left side, a little bit more meaty on the right side.
You got to be quicker on the left side because you got to protect that blind side.
But I think he's quick. I think he's built like a guard right now, and it's kind of tough to like transform your body mid-season, especially when you're trying to keep it. Because if you get your weight all out of whack, if you're offensive lineman, it could totally change the way you play, and it could totally change the way you use leverage and all that shit. But yeah, I don't know. Like you said, where you start is you gotta modernize. The defense is the defense. Like if we're gonna be keeping Bill, because I think it's 50-50 right now. I think there is a possibility they could get rid of him, but I think it's probably just as high of a possibility that they keep him. So the defense is the defense. I think there's a lot of loose ends you gotta tie up there with the Duggars and I think the front seven. You're getting kind of old there with just Barmore and Keon White kind of as your young studs there. I think you have to find somebody in the middle, even though Tavai is good. But I think Bentley and Tavai, you can only hold it together so long there. But you have a lot of talent on the back end. You do have Duggar, who you can sign. You have friggin'
Peppers,
who's been by far their best player on defense. Then you have John Jones, who absolutely shut down, who looked like he was shutting down Keenan Allen in the first half of that game. And then they went to a little bit more zone in the second half, and he started eating over the middle. But I think that John Jones and Christian Gonzalez is more than enough as your top two corners. I think Duggar and Peppers is almost enough. I think you need a free safety, but almost enough on the back end. I think you have good pieces on the front end, but it's just you can't win games 0-0. You gotta put up points. And I think, dude, if you went out and you fucking spent some guy, if you go give Michael Pittman a bag, go fucking draft Caleb Williams, let him paint his fingernails, whatever you want, make his mom the OC, draft Marvin Harrison Jr., go back into the top five with every pick you ever had and get Marvin Harrison Jr. too, and you have fucking Zeke Ramondre with two Ferraris on the outside with Caleb Williams and a brand new OC with that defense letting up 10 points a game, dude, that's a scary team going forward. But you get like – to get to that point, you have to totally dismantle the way of doing things that the Patriots have been for the last 20 years. And that's going to be tough with the precedent they set.
Absolutely. And Shai, I'm curious on how you feel as a unbiased person here sitting in the room here.
Yeah, 100%. As an outsider to Pats Nation, I want to piggyback off of what you said, Joe. They need to develop a new mindset. Go out, bite the bullet, go get stars. Like Bill Belichick's been doing his whole career with the Patriots as finding diamonds in the rough and being like, oh, wow, how did Bill find that person? Like, swallow some pride. Just go for the best guy. Use your cap room that you have. Pick up some people. You're not going to – like, you've had some luck. Yeah, I know the Michael Owenu? Or you guys got him in the fourth round? That was a good seventh pickup round, at the time. Right? And he – was it seventh? I thought it was fourth.
Yeah, dude. I think it was late.
But still, like, add some stars to your team. Like, your receiver core needs it. Running back, I know Ramondre.
Yeah, sixth round, 182 overall.
That's crazy. Yeah. But just bring players that your fan base is going to want to go see at Gillette. Like, as an outsider, like, I know I'm still in the division, so I have a pretty good education of you guys' team. But for the rest of the NFL, you name your receiver core, you name your linemen, you name most of your defense, they've never heard of them. Mm-hmm. That's an issue.
Yeah, especially today when it's like, look at the Niners-Eagles game. It's Debo, it's fucking Christian McCaffrey, it's Ayuk. All those studs on the offense, it's Ayuk, it's all those big names making plays. And I think that the Patriots used to win on the margins, but I think they need to start winning in the middle now. Like I think that they need to use that to get over the top, not to get to where they need to go. Like, I think that the scouting and everything that the Patriots used to kind of like be ahead with, I think has all kind of caught up to the Pats. And now when they kind of do things as they're usually doing it, the player pool that they're picking from, like those steals, those flyers, is getting smaller, because I think other teams are starting to see the same things they are. And I think, Chai, you're right, dude. Even if they go out and make some splashes and get some star power in there, those guys play for Belichick. Look, when you went and got Randy Moss and he puts up 23 touchdowns, 1,800 yards. So, like, Belichick has these ways of getting these players to buy into the system, which I still think he can do. But you need to do that as well as winning on the margins. That's like a team like Detroit, dude. They're losing the trade, getting the two first round picks and trading away Matt Stafford, but they get a big acquisition in Goff, and then they just nail a bunch of top draft picks at skill positions. So, like, you gotta do it both ways. Look at the Eagles, dude. They traded for AJ Brown, but they drafted Hurts, Devontae Smith. They drafted a lot of players. They drafted Jalen Carter on defense. Like, the same thing with the 49ers, dude. They have big free agents. Actually, they really don't have a lot of big free agents.
They've hit on a lot of their picks.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's and some good trades Jaylen too. Look Carter. At the Chase Young trade. Yeah, Jalen
DMC crazy. DMC yeah. trade too.
You know, so I think you got to do it both ways. You can't just try to take flyers on people like Pop Douglas in the draft and expect them to carry your franchise. Like taking a flyer on Gronk in the second round does in like whatever 2010.
But even with that,
go ahead.
Sorry, Virg. Even with that though, you want to build through the draft. I can't remember a time other than this past draft where the Patriots stayed at their pick and drafted.
No, they still traded back. They traded back two picks.
Yeah, like once again, bite the bullet, get a star player. Don't try to bite back and then double down on more picks and see what you can do with it in the later rounds. Just if you have somebody there available sitting at your pick, just take them. Because at this point, the Patriots don't have a position that they don't need.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of this comes down to the owner opening up his checkbook. Like we've talked about it on this pod going back and forth, like how much blame does Belichick get? How much blame does Kraft get for this whole thing? And I think that Kraft needs to really open up the checkbook. And I don't want to get into the whole thing, but like they need a whole new player personnel department. They need somebody else making decisions. We all agree on that. And Kraft needs to be able to fork the money and be able to swallow like a 70+ million dollar guaranteed contract for a player if his team wants to be big. Like I don't even care. Like spend all the money on these big dudes to get the star power in there, and you're gonna fill your seats if regardless of how the team performs. If you have that star power, Kraft's gonna get his return on investment because the seats are gonna be filled and the merchandise is gonna be sold. So at the end of the day, they have to do that. And like my stance on Bill is like, I want him to stay. I'm a big Bill stan. Joe and I disagree on that whole thing. But there needs to be changes. If he's not willing to give up the GM role, if he's not willing to give up the offense or pay for people, then I want him gone too. Because
wheelchair off the cliff. Yes.
What was the last big signing you guys had? Judon? How did that work out? It worked great.
Yeah. Hunter Henry was good too.
Hunter Henry was good, but they also had a couple of whiffs in there too.
That was the Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry free agency.
Nelson Aguilar, like that too. Yeah. That whole thing.
Bourne, they nailed Judon, they nailed Henry. So, whatever. But yeah, dude, not to go too off topic on a football podcast, but Shai, did you just see what happened? The New York Yankees have acquired Alex Verdugo from the Boston Red Sox for three pitchers.
They made a trade with the Yankees? Wow.
Yeah, Red Sox and Yankees. Red Sox are sending Verdugo to the Yankees.
Who are the pitchers? Farm league, I imagine.
I have no fucking idea. For right-handers, Richard Fitz, Greg Weiser, and Nicholas Judas.
Weiser's good. He's young too.
I can't believe the Red Sox made a trade with the Yankees.
Pay any money to go to that fucking dump of a fucking ballpark owned by that fucking cheap prick, fucking John Henry, dude. Go fuck. Buy another hockey team. Buy another soccer team, you piece of shit.
Prioritize the Pittsburgh Penguins over the Red Sox. That's what he's doing.
Fuck you. Fuck you. Anyway, let's talk about two more good teams and then get to some gambling and get the fuck out of here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll talk about the Chiefs and the Packers. The Chiefs and the Packers played on Sunday. Packers with the upset at home against the Chiefs with Taylor Swift in attendance. I can't fucking stand that whole thing. 27-19. I want to know your thoughts on this. I have some thoughts about the officiating on this I want to get into, but Joe, I want you to run with this here. Jordan Love looked pretty good in this game.
I'm trying to I was trying to pull up the Oops, I Did It Again by Britney Spears and playing into my mic. But all right, so the Packers, they did it again. They did it again. They did it. They did it again. They've done it three times in a fucking row. They did it again. Right in the Bears' face, right in the Patriots' face, right in the Jets' face. They did it again. Dude, I saw a great tweet where it was just like, in the year, they were like, Jordan Love has already signed a futures contract with the Jets to play for them in 2043. I thought that was funny. But, dude, Jordan Love, 25 of 36, 267 yards, three touchdowns, no picks, 90 QBR, 119 quarterback rating. Dude, and you see him, he's rolling out to his right, throwing across it. So rolling out to his right, throwing to the sidelines, rolling out to the left, throwing across his body, hitting guys right in the fucking, right in the numbers. He's taking, dude, he's even doing the stuff that Rodgers does, the off platform, rolling out and all that shit. But he's also standing in the pocket, stepping up and ripping balls over the middle, which is like a little bit different than how Rodgers plays the game. I think another team that hit on a couple draft picks at the wide receiver position. They got Watson and Dobbs, but they're both good. And I think they hit on I think their defense is vaunted as well. I don't think they played a flawless game. I think they got some help from the officiating, but so didn't KC. I don't think KC, their margin for error this year is a lot smaller than it usually is. I've been applauding them this whole year about how they've kind of been able to win the game a couple different ways. But I think so much is on Mahomes this year. You see him throwing that pick late in the game pretty much sealed their feet, especially after Green Bay goes down and kicks a field goal. So, yeah, like I said, the Chiefs are finding different ways to win games. They couldn't find a way to win this game. It's a lot tougher when Mahomes isn't playing perfect. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't typical Mahomes-like in this game. But, yeah, they fucking did it again. It's fucking aggravating.
it's extremely aggravating. I don't know if you guys have seen the Packers' remaining schedule, but they're not only make an impact in the playoffs, but they have the Giants, the Bucks, the Panthers, the Vikings, and the Bears. They could finish the season 11-6 when they started what, 2-5?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Imagine that being a 10-win team. The year after Rodgers leaves, they win 10 games.
I thought their offense was beautiful football this Sunday. Everything
winning 10 games after your franchise quarterback leaves. Fuck. Mm-hmm. That's really impressive. Nice. Yeah. Must be nice. They drafted a quarterback and developed him and had a plan. Oh.
Yeah.
What you were saying, Shai?
I think it came down to a lot of things. Yeah, their receiving core, very young, but excelling way faster than anybody thought. Christian Watson, I hope he's okay. That's a bummer way to get hurt at the end of the game. But I think the Chiefs kind of started to seal their fate even in the first quarter. Those three sacks in the red zone to make them kick two field goals bit them in the ass at the end of the game. And then, of course, that Mahomes interception, that just – that was horrible. Yeah. He threw it basically back shoulder to the cornerback.
Yep.
I still don't have any concern with the Chiefs. I think they're gonna still make their way to the playoffs. Obviously, still make a push in the playoffs. I don't think there's any concerns, but this says a lot.
That's how wide open it is too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to kind of touch on that before I get to the officiating in this game. But like the Chiefs are really have their path is just. To the Super Bowl is just getting easier with all of these quarterback injuries that are across the AFC. I mean, we saw Trevor Lawrence go down, you know, on Sunday. Joe Burrow's been out. Anthony Richardson's out. I mean, I'm missing some, but like, it's just it's been a year this year. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, we'll talk about him. But like, it's just been an absolutely brutal year to be a quarterback in the NFL this year. They're all getting hurt, and it seems like majority of them are in the AFC. So like. The Chiefs can drop these games now, but if they get in the playoffs, like Mahomes is going to be the guy with the experience there. I think it's going to be I don't want it to be a cakewalk because I'm really, really hammering Houston as my team that I really want to be in the Super Bowl there. I really want to see a Detroit-Houston Super Bowl. That was something that the casual NFL fan will hate, but as somebody that watches it every week, I want that so bad. I will. That is a game that I would be like, I'm taking off from work the next day. I'm doing the whole thing for that.
I'm taking off my pants, dude. That would be
That's a good point.
Break out the Crisco. We're getting weird on a Sunday.
Might be a live stream then for Joe there. But yeah, dude, the officiating in this game, dude, Like I've been hammering them all year since we've been doing this podcast. It's been an absolute joke. And I know you can't, the NFL officials make mistakes weekly, every year. But like this year, it just seems like it's so bad. That rough, unnecessary roughness penalty. I forget who the guy on Green Bay was that hit Mahomes.
Oh, when Mahomes is like clearly standing in bounds.
Absolutely beautiful hit. It was a beautiful shoulder-to-shoulder hit. Mahomes is a guy that if a guy lets up right there, he's taking the liberty and taking the extra 2 or 3 yards on that. I love that hit. And that hit needs to be brought back into the game. But the NFL can't seem to get out of their own way with it.
There's just such a gray area when it comes to those calls. Like, nobody knows what's a penalty anymore. Most of the Hall of Famers of the early 2000s would not be allowed to play in the league today, which is crazy.
Absolutely. And like,
they'd be on a police scanner somewhere, dude. They would be calling the police on these people.
Like, that's like, ESPN's messing up on me here. Jesus.
I know when we record, they only,
I know it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But if that's Zach Wilson or Mac Jones or, dude, is even like somebody like Jared Goff getting that call? Your stars are going to get that call, but like blatantly inbounds. And then what do they do? Like a play or two later, they miss a blatant pass interference call on Valdez Scantling.
That was bad.
Clearly a makeup call. But like, dude, like it's impacting these games in big moments. I'm so sick of it.
And then you have fucking Tom Brady coming out and be like, you can't have all these plays taken. I'm like, dude, you're the reason that all of this fucking bitchification has happened from the game, dude. I understand that there's a bunch of stats out there about how, like, Allen and Mahomes have had more, like, rough in the past. I'm like, dude, the reason – dude, Tom Brady blew out his knee in 2008 and they made the Brady rule. You can't hit them under – you can't hit them under the knee when they're planted throwing. So it's like those comments rub me though. It's like all the fucking pro golfers coming out about the golf ball being like, it's not going to make a difference. And then Tom Brady fucking so tone deaf. All of these rules were made because of him and Peyton Manning turning it into a quarterback-centric league, playing up the Brady-Manning rivalry when, newsflash, quarterbacks never take the field at the same time. So how much of a fucking actual rivalry is it, dude? It's one person playing against one entity and another person playing against a different entity. I never got that shit. Yeah. But it's like Tom Brady, so fucking tone deaf with the physicality of the game. Dude, Tom Brady, tough dude. I won't take anything away from the guy. You've seen there's that one play where versus the Bills in his first or second season. Decapitated. Mm-hmm. He played that AFC Championship game versus the Jaguars with like literally his bone hanging out of his the palm of his hand. He played Super Bowl 42 versus the Giants on a bad high ankle sprain. He was in a walking boot the whole week before. Like, dude, Tom Brady's a tough guy, but like they legislated the game to keep players like you healthy, and now you're spinning it back around. And the reason you played for that fucking long is because you didn't take fucking hits like that. You learned how to not take them, and they legislated him out of the game. It was he's been so fucking cringe ever since he's left football. Dude, I will do some fucked up shit just to do some fucked up shit just to say hi to Tom Brady in person. But like him off the field and after, it's just like tone deaf, millionaire, like fucking glad he lost a bunch of money in FTX shit. Just relax and go away.
He's been cringe since he left New England. Let's be real.
Doesn't even look like himself.
That Bucks training camp interview when he came back from the plastic surgery, that was terrifying.
Oh, dude. He's talking like this.
I know.
He could barely move his mouth. And it's like, bro, we get it, dude. He's probably all insecure because him and Giselle were on the outs and she's like banging her fitness instructor. He's like, yo, I got to fill this fucking face full of Botox immediately.
Yeah. All right. I'm good with that game. I think we hit on everything there. Joe, you want to start running with the picks?
Yeah, dude, we had a fucking week headlined by Burge with a nice 3-0 for the weekend, carrying the boys. So we had Burge at 3-0. He hit Indy -1, Arizona +5.5, which was the longest game in NFL football history, delayed 8 times. They never got to play that game. But Arizona ends up winning outright, +5.5 hits there. And then his lock, Houston -3.5, with a nice pick by Houston on the goal line to end that game. So nice 3-0 week from Burge. Move down to – we'll just knock off Kojak real quick here. He ended up having Philly +3 at home. Pick missed by 20 points, but we appreciate the pick nonetheless. And then I went 2-1 on the week last week. My one loss was Cleveland +5. They were covering that whole fucking game. They were playing good. Joe Flacco looked like Joe Flacco of old. And then, like, the last 7 minutes of that game, the Chargers walked to the middle of the field. They – pulled down their pants and they took a giant shit all over the fucking Cleveland Browns. So that's how that game went. Sorry, Shy, but I did have Atlanta minus 2.5. That was like stealing candy from a fucking baby. Usually you don't if you think a game's going under, you usually don't think that the favorite's going to cover, but given how anemic both of those offenses are, I think 2.5 was an easy cover there. And then my lock was Detroit minus 3.5. Got a little squirrely kind of at the beginning of the fourth quarter there with the Saints kind of making a comeback, but they ended up being able to hold on and cover the number of 3.5. I'll just roll right into my picks from this week. Oh, actually, no. Let's do a little recap. Let's do a little fucking brag. I'm going to fucking brag real quick. So after a 5-2 weekend for the BTP boys, that moves us to a overall of 30-25-2, which is fucking legit. 5 games over .500, 57 games picked. That's pretty good. And then we have our locks are 11-6. So almost a 65% clip on our locks there. So I feel like that's pretty good.
Absolutely.
I'll roll right into our picks for this week. My pick for this week, I'll have I have two outside of my lock. The first one is going to be Baltimore minus 7. I think the Ravens are rolling. They had a nice week to get off, to get everybody healthy. That's a team there that they have a lot of injury concerns, but when they all play and they're all lubed up playing together, we'll find finely tooled machine. I think they could easily cover 7 at home versus the Rams. I think the Rams have a little bit of fool's gold there. I think they kind of busted that game open versus the Browns, like we talked about at the end there. I don't think that was as much of a blowout as it shows up on paper. The next game I have is Carolina plus 5 at New Orleans. I think that getting rid of your coach is going to give you a little bit of a pop. I think that the Panthers showed a little bit of fight this week. I think New Orleans is a team ripe for the picking, especially when you don't know what quarterback they're going to be going with there. I think that's a classic. They have the pieces around it, but still the guy driving the car is not good enough to win the NFL games. Excuse me. So I think Carolina, with a little bit of emotion from losing their coach and showing a little fight last week, can cover a 5-point number there. Brings me to our lock. We're Stroud boys. Stroud boys stand back. Stroud boys stand tall. We are taking Houston minus 5.5. That'll be my lock for this week. So my two picks will be Baltimore minus 7, Carolina plus 5. And the lock for the week is Houston minus 5.5. CJ Stroud, we love you. Come on the pod. Burge, what do you got for me?
Love it. Love it. I'm going to start off. I have my two picks here. I'm going to go with the Browns minus 3. They're playing the Jacksonville Jaguars at home. As we know, Trevor Lawrence got hurt at the end of the game last night on Monday night. Not going to be playing next weekend there. I think that Cleveland has found ways to win games this year, despite their own quarterback problems. You know, Joe Flacco again had a day, you know, against the Rams this past week. I like them to continue that. They're in a good playoff position right now, so they've got a lot to play for. So give me the Browns minus 3 at home against the Jaguars with, you know, I don't even know who Jacksonville's backup quarterback is at this point. So
CJ Beathard.
Yeah, CJ Beathard. Beathard. Yeah, we'll go with him. Yeah. That's so give me the Browns there. I'm going to follow up one of my last week wins here with Indianapolis, and I'm going to take the minus 1 on the road against Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati kind of played the game of their life last night against the Jacksonville Jaguars to come in with, you know, with Jake Browning as their quarterback. I like Indianapolis to continue rolling. They're also in the playoff hunt right now. I like them to continue rolling with Gardner Minshew. I've really liked what Gardner Minshew has done this year, filling in for Anthony Richardson with the Indianapolis Colts. So give me the Colts minus 1 there. My lock of the week. Joe and I had a little bit of bone of contention on this before we got on recording because we both are massive, massive Detroit Lions stands. I'm going to be taking the lock of Detroit minus 3 this week. Dude, I like them to keep rolling, man. I mean, they're playing the Chicago Bears. They're on the road, but the Chicago Bears have been one of those teams that's been kind of a mess this year, you know, in terms of what they've done. They have been, you know, fighting injuries with their quarterback and it's been dysfunctional. So I like Detroit to keep rolling, keep up their hunt for that number one seed. I know now they're only a game back, you know, with the 49ers and the Eagles, you know, leading the pack right now, but I'm not going away from my boys. I'm rolling with the Lions all the way to the end. I'll go down with that ship. So give me the Lions -3 as my lock this week. Shai, you got a pick for us?
Yeah, I got two picks for you. I really wish Kojak was on here so I could hear the picks, not the pick. but just like him, I'm big on player props, but with it being so early in the week that we're recording, not many are out right now. One that I found interesting for the Patriots and Steelers game is they have either team to score 3 unanswered times. I don't find that happening at all. They have it at +130. I'm going to take that.
Love it.
So no at +130.
Yeah. No at +130, either team to score 3 unanswered times.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's
not going to happen.
Yeah. My
walk. They have to score 3 times total for that to happen. Exactly. So that in itself makes it a logical fallacy.
Exactly. So yeah, I feel pretty confident about that one.
Me too.
I'm a little aggressive on my lock of the week. I'm gonna go Eagles money line. I think it is crazy to think that they're gonna lose 2 games in a row, and doesn't matter where they are. I know AT&T Stadium. Kojak can attest to that. Like, it is wild in that stadium, but I don't see Dallas beating Eagles at all. I feel like Eagles are going to bounce back from this, and people want to forget. Yeah, I know the 49ers beat the Eagles 42-19, but they also beat the Cowboys 42-10 mm-hmm. earlier in the season. Okay. I see the Eagles coming out on this.
I like it.
Where's the money line?
+154 for the Eagles, I think.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
I got it at 153. Yeah, let's go. I like that. I like that pick, Shaq. Yeah. I think that the Cowboys are a little bit of a paper tiger too.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the Cowboys are a good team. They're gonna be in the playoff picture, but I think the Eagles, looking at their schedule, I don't think they're losing another game this season.
Well, they kind of just went through the gauntlet, right? They had a bunch of tough games in a row. They only ended up dropping one.
Yeah, the Cowboys is their last tough one, and then it dies down. They got the Giants twice to end the season.
Nice.
Cakewalk.
Yeah, must be fucking nice, yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't find a Zach Wilson over 4 touchdown passes better, as I would have bought on it.
I don't think that many zeros on the fucking odds could fit in these fucking Excel cells.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you guys got anything else you guys want to hit on before we plug this sucker up?
No. Just start slamming the picks. We're getting hot again.
Let's go. All right. Well, as always, you guys can follow us on Twitter at @BTP_podcast_. I'm on there at @BurgeTheGoalie. Joe Scher is on there at @The_JuicyJew. If you guys like hockey, be sure to check out the 2 Pat Stab podcast that I'm a co-host of. You can check them out on the socials there on the or on Primetime Productions websites. We're all there. If you want to buy tickets to a game, you want to go see the Patriots on Thursday night, or actually they might be on the road, but if you want to go see the Patriots at their next home game to, you know, suck it up to get us their get us that #1 overall draft pick, be sure to use SeatGeek, and if you use the 2 Pad Stack Podcasts promo code, it's the #2 Pad Stack Pod. You'll save $20 off your first SeatGeek order. So if you want to check out a game, and that goes for any sport, doesn't have to be football or hockey. It can be basketball. You want to go to a Celtics game or a Knicks game or anything like that. Use that code and save yourself some cash, $20 off your first order. So, Shai, you want to plug your socials in there for us?
Yeah, my handle is on Twitter, Shai_Vanhill. My Instagram is @YourHomieShiloh, and yeah, that's a good deal with Game Time too, especially with the Patriots and Jets ticket prices right now. Probably if you get $20 off, they'll probably give you $15.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, hey, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on with us. And
thank you for coming on, Shai.
Yeah, we appreciate it, and we'll hope to have you back on maybe in the offseason, maybe towards the end of the year. We can see where our teams are at. Both our teams are kind of, we won't say they're playoff teams, but they're dumpster fires right now. So be good to some good offseason talk coming. So again, thanks again. It was nice to meet you. Thanks for coming on. And as always, guys, we'll see y'all next week. Have a good week.
Pleasure having me, guys.
Peace out, boys.
Peace.